Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
It's a Thanksgiving edition 2025, which means it's kind of like the Black Friday and Cyber Monday edition all sort of rolled into one big thankful edition. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media, Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls.
Hey, everybody.
And again, like I said, it's the Thanksgiving edition. It's it's American Thanksgiving. Up here in Canada, we celebrate Thanksgiving at a way more sensible time when it's still warm out. And it's not, you know, it's not snowy and stuff. But to everyone celebrating it, to everyone getting together with their families, happy Thanksgiving. Hope you have a safe, wonderful, and graceful time.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
What are you doing for Thanksgiving? You got anything special planned?
Yeah, every year I go down and do a serve downtown for people who don't have a Thanksgiving to go to or don't have the money or unhoused. And we bring food, like a big old potluck, and we have dancing and haircuts and calling cards for people to call their families and clothing and all that sort of good stuff. And then I'm going to go to a friend's house for a Friendsgiving after that. Usually they overlap and I have to go all grubby. This year I get to take a shower in between. I'm happy.
So this is, for some people, I suppose, so for the very, very lucky, this is a rare occurrence of a four-day weekend. If you can get out there and enjoy it, folks, like we are stuck to our monitors, stuck to our screens, and stuck to our desks. And that's like, you know, heart attack inducing. Go outside and enjoy yourselves.
Touch some grass, as they say.
Yeah. Okay. But stuff happened in the meantime. Before we get to that stuff, special thanks to our sponsors, Wix Studio and Audience Key. They keep the tapes running and the lights on and the news reporting and all that stuff. Okay.
And just just want to jump in. Just a reminder, Audience Key has that great product grid tracker, which you, if you're e-commerce, would be really helpful right now. And it's an inexpensive tool. Go ahead, Jim. Sorry.
No, actually, but as you were talking, I was thinking about some of the changes that Google's making in. Do we still call it Google Shopping? I mean, it was Google Shopping like last week.
Yeah, as far as this week, I think it's still shopping.
That Audience Key's product grid would actually be really, really, really helpful with. We got to get Tom on to talk about that sort of stuff.
I know. I've been trying for so long. He's been so busy with launching the new product, yes, at that time, but we need to get them on in the new year.
Okay, so it's not like we take great pleasure in reporting bugs at Google. It's just that, you know, Google gives us a lot of bugs to report on. So yes. Google Local Pack links to Places tab with a pagination bug. Google Maps is kind of busted. What's up?
Oh, that's okay. it's just when you, I thought it'd be important this week since it's Thanksgiving and you're probably looking for local results when you're not at your home place. Anyway, when you click on More Businesses button at the bottom of the Local Pack, you aren't taken to Google Maps, you're taken to Google Places tab. And so when you see more, you see the pagination is broken and it just kind of lists things. So just be aware that that's what's going on and it's not you and it's not that your phone has gone crazy. It's just Google has a bug. And this is from Barry Schwartz and Search Engine Roundtable.
Okay, so it's Google bug. It will be fixed, and we will likely report next week that it's been fixed. Or not.
Or not.
You never know. Okay, this one was hilarious. This was so much fun.
This is funny.
So in the in X, the quote-unquote free speech forum owned by Elon Musk, someone decided to move towards greater transparency, I guess, and turn on the location identifier for, well, every account. And as it turns out, oddly enough, and this isn't just in the United States, but it was most fun looking at the American results, but happened in Canada and in France and Europe as well. Far right accounts, like accounts for the serious right wing, tend to be from a very limited number of places that are often not in the countries that they're associated with. For instance, a whole bunch of MAGA accounts, including MAGA Nation, are based in like Eastern Europe, other like places like Thailand, Nigeria, Bangladesh. I remember back in the original Trump era, there was those kids in Romania who were honestly just looking to get a really good AdWords driven business together, and they figured they're going to get the most clicks out of inciting the right wing, and so they went far right and created some like. Well, some incredible clickbait, but also some incredible misinformation that influenced the trajectory of the election.
Yeah, back then it was Romania, Macedonia, and an American who actually voted for Clinton. But what they found out was they would drop their fake news stories for their sites into all the Facebook groups for all the candidates. And the ones that went viral were MAGA. So they were making money. The guy in the US was making 80,000 a month. That was soon taken over, though, that kind of bot activity by the Internet Research Agency, by Russia, where they had three floors and some didn't speak English and some did. And they had different tasks they had to perform to keep people occupied and not countering the disinformation. So it is interesting. It's interesting that Musk did this because Musk is also often a purveyor of misinformation. So, but they have people been listing. There's a guy Harry Sison and from the oh I can't think of their last name properly. The two brothers Krasenstein or something like that. They've been listing a bunch of the accounts that have showed up. But yes, MAGA Nation is one with 400,000 followers. Some of our details came from the New York Times here, but also I saw it online happen. MAGA Nation was actually posting disinformation as this came out. So I went and checked them. I'm like, oh, they are not in the US.
And again, some of the most virulent far right Canadian Twixter or X profiles are from Ireland, Thailand, Russia. They are not from, well, Canada. The Alberta separatists tend not to be from Alberta. So foreign influence via X, and again, sadly, it's probably not even overtly political. It's people trying to make a buck off politics.
Well, yeah, but yeah, a lot of cases though it is political. Also, I did say to someone, there could be someone handling an account in Europe that happened to be an American, talking American stuff like MAGA or something. But when it's Nigeria and Thailand and Eastern Europe, and it becomes less and less likely that that could happen. So these are most likely just not accounts that are valid, they're legit. Also, they tell you what device they connected with, and if it's a US device connection. And they're going to be telling you if they connect with a VPN.
And
So,
so, what I'm wondering about is how come X hasn't shut this down? I mean, wouldn't this be terribly embarrassing to Musk and his acolytes?
Musk put this out there. So I don't know why.
Well, yeah, Musk has a whole bunch of stuff that he regrets later, though.
Yeah, because he does a lot of ketamine. I'm not saying that's what happened, but because he there's actually US government accounts that aren't done in the United States. Like Karen Levitz the other day was like from some like Nigeria or something, and they took off the location on JD Vance's account. It doesn't tell you where it's being done from, but that's probably after a bunch of the government accounts came back as not in the US. So,
Yeah, well, a lot of stuff gets couched around JD Vance.
yeah. So, anyway, it's interesting. Oh, you can go to the account info and the profile under the three little dots, and you can look at. It says about this account and it'll tell you if it's from the US. Just because it's from the US doesn't mean it's valid either. But, like MAGA Nation with 400,000 followers, I would be curious to see how many followers they have by next month since they're the one reported on the most. So.
So we'll again. I'm pretty sure they're going to change this or turn it off or something
I
because
think so too.
I can't help but think this immediately disempowers those dissonant voices from the far right if they aren't actually representing the people they say they're representing.
Yeah, I think my only thought is that he thought he was going to expose a bunch of right and left-leaning accounts, but the left just has amplification groups where individuals who are real get their stuff amplified by other individuals. They don't really do well on the fake accounts, which is why they often lose the narrative, and they don't have big bot networks that I've ever seen. Some occasionally, but it's rare. So yeah, so you know when I'm getting attacked on X, it's 90% stuff from the right. So.
So, how to phrase this one? If you ever are using social media, using Facebook, Meta, Instagram, or one of the Meta family, and you're feeling dragged out and depressed, and it's kind of anxious and weird afterwards, we'd like to say and assure you that Meta knows how you feel, but we're not sure that they do, given that they halted the study that would have given them conclusive evidence that their application leaves users feeling depressed, anxious, and just craptastic. According to a legal filing that was released on Friday, Meta actually halted internal research that showed people who stopped using Facebook became less depressed and less anxious. I
Yeah,
mean,
and there, yeah, it was called Project Mercury. It started in late 2019, and this is from CNBC. And it just shows that they knew, and they just decided not to really know. So, and yeah.
This information dropped out of a legal brief that comes from a high district, a high profile case. A number of school districts, parents, state attorneys, there are suing social media companies. And this happening also in Australia. It's happening with a number of provinces in Canada. Meta, YouTube, Snap, TikTok, they're all in legal crosshairs for messing with kids' heads. Giving kids weird body or social body expectations, social expectations, sexual expectations, and leaving kids just feeling messed up after their experiences. And same happens with adults, but again, this is around a litigation again around the effect on children. And again, Meta knew enough to stop the investigation before the investigation would lead them to know too much.
Yeah, the lawsuit said that or alleged that Meta was disappointed that the initial tests of the study showed that people who stopped using Facebook for a week, just a week, reported lower feelings of depression, anxiety, loneliness, and social comparison. Meta allegedly chose not to sound the alarm, but instead stopped the research, according to the lawsuit. And they never publicly disclosed the results.
So do you remember in the was it 80s and 90s when Congress was going after the tobacco companies and you saw rows of the they made a movie about this
Good
Thank You for
movie.
Smoking
It's a good movie.
and you saw rows of like CEOs and corporate lobbyists testifying to Congress seriously telling Congress that as far as they understood tobacco does not cause cancer. Smoking tobacco will not cause cancer, as far as they understood it. And that's what this feels like.
Yeah, do you remember that they used to tell doctors to tell patients that it was healthy for them? That it would cure diseases. This is before the thank you not smoking people. Thank you for smoking. Yeah, the advertising groups. There's actual ads that say smoke for your health for
Certainly.
diseases like yeah, lung diseases.
Well, certainly, but then in the late 50s, early 60s, Mad Men covered this wonderfully. The news broke that, in fact, this product does kill you, will
Yeah,
kill you, addict
exactly.
you, and kill you. And again, we know the same thing about social media, and even now the short 30-second videos like TikTok. We know that they mess with people's heads. Their makers know that they mess with people's heads. Earlier before the show, Christine and I were arguing over whether to cover the story of ChatGPT counseling suicide. For the record, she thinks it's an important story. I think it's not a tech marketing story, but in light of the idea that Meta knew that its product was causing harm and stopped the study that would prove it. It's very likely that the AI makers should probably, have some awareness of dangers of their products as well.
Yeah, and Jim hasn't heard the video that I heard last night from a crisis group where they read the transcripts out loud from the court record of what ChatGPT actually said. So he will have watched that by next week, I think. And we
Well,
might
no, I
have on the
will.
same
Then I
opinion at
will. I'm
that
going to give
point.
it my mind and all that sort of stuff. Again,
No, I'm just saying you might have a similar opinion as me after you hear what it actually did.
I think
So.
there's a whole bunch of dismissal of responsibility going on, but this is the corporate world. I've been sort of watching this happen most of my career. Okay. Things that often don't happen when it comes to government and regulation, the EU is actually working to simplify regulation rather than complicate regulation. So I think the EU understands that Google's addicted to cookies and just can't get rid of them. That the world is addicted to cookies and
C
just
is
can't
for
get rid of them.
cookie. It's good enough for me.
Well,
Anyway.
it's also the only way to measure actual web
Yeah.
traffic, but I
They
digress.
tried. They tried.
The
They
EU is going to
didn't
try to
succeed.
simplify the GDPR targets aimed at like cookie consent and ostensibly at AI training. It's going to, and this could be dangerous. There's going to be a proposed digital omnibus package, a massive bill of ideas that move through the European Parliament that will chill out parts of the GDPR, the AI Act, and the rules Europe has around cookies that make you put those really intrusive things at the bottom of all your websites that slow the hell down at a load time.
Yeah, they
What do
can
you
be
think?
really bad for that. I have mixed feelings about it, but I do know this was pushed by AI and they want to make it easier to train on things, so that's why they're doing this. But at the same time, when you have to deal with those pop-ups all the time for no apparent reason, and they do really cause sometimes, unless you have a really good one, the consent banner that comes up is often something that slows down the load a lot. I could see, the commission wants to cut banner fatigue by exempting some non-risk cookies from consent pop-ups and shifting more control into browser-level settings that apply across sites, so you would have control over it as opposed to it just being automatic. So I'm mixed. I don't really like the idea of giving it because you want AI to do more training, because that's just taking people's information so you can reuse it and cut them out of the mix. But at the same time, will I like a website to have a cookie banner acceptance every time I go to it? Probably.
I do appreciate the very clever cookie acceptance banners that sort of extort my time off me. Accept our cookies, or you will have to watch these ads. It's like, okay,
That
you know what,
too.
you win. I don't care what you're tracking. Just give me that 30 seconds back.
Well, and like when I opened up all the stories from Search Engine Journal today, every single one had an accept the cookie pop-up. So I had accepted it 20 times, I think, today or 10 times today. Like, okay, oh my gosh.
Somebody has got to tell the people over at Search Engine Journal that the wrong pop-ups are being triggered. Those are supposed to be ads, aren't they?
It's true too. We love you, Search Engine Journal, but sometimes you have had an ad problem, but you know that you've admitted it yourself. So,
It's not a problem, man. It's a situation.
and by the way, I just have to say, I know this is totally random to anybody who's not in our industry, but I always see Matt Southern and I see his longer hair, and that's how I know it's an article he wrote, but he cut it and it looks really good. But now I have to read the name because I always could just identify it's a Matt article by his profile picture. Oh, anyway,
Yeah.
Matt Southern did the reporting on this, is what I was really getting to. We don't say his name enough, and he does a lot of the reporting for Search Engine Journal. So, just want to make sure
Oh,
his name
Matt.
got
Yeah,
out
Matt
there.
Southard has been carrying a massive, massive weight of information for the search engine marketing for the search engine marketing industry for like a decade now.
Yeah, and he doesn't get mentioned a lot, and I just want to make sure I did. So.
Yeah, see, he's a pretty low-key dude. Okay. A shopping research assistant has been introduced to ChatGPT. It's a new experience in ChatGPT that does the research for you to help you find the right products. So this is, Google's going shopping experience. This is OpenAI's response to that.
Yeah, so this their comment was in Search Engine Roundtable. Shopping research is powered by a version of GPT-5 Mini trained with reinforcement learning specifically for shopping tasks. We trained it to read trusted sites, cite reliable sources, and synthesize information across many sources to produce high-quality product research. We also designed it to be an interactive experience that could update and refine its research in real time, incorporating new constraints and adjusting to feedback on user product preferences, resulting in a response that feels both well-researched and personalized. By the way, they wrote that with GPT because it has the dashes. It's just, we know on the newest models, it's wrong between 35% and 48% of the time. So is it for shopping? I don't know, but I would make sure that you double check anything important, like a spec, or something of that nature.
Here's the neat thing though. This is being done by reinforcing the stuff it learns as it asks you questions. So it's going to ask you a question and ostensibly it's going to remember your responses and your positive and negative responses to it. And it's going to ask you more questions and more questions and more questions. So theoretically, this thing's refining itself as it goes along.
It is, but it still could be wrong.
Well, the neat thing will be to see if that refinement process can cut the error, can cut the number of errors.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure there'll be research on it. So I will bring it to the show when I see it in LinkedIn from the researchers that have AI.
This is where consumers and where not not where, but this is how consumers spend their disposable income. And believe it or not, some consumers still have a good amount of disposable income. I guarantee you, a ton of research is going into this.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. By the way, if you're looking for AI research, LinkedIn is a really good place to be, even though I don't love LinkedIn. But if you follow the researchers, you get a lot of this information firsthand with the papers that come along with it.
And if you follow them yelling, chiclets, 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 they might buy something off you.
They just might.
It's true. I hate LinkedIn. I'm sorry.
I know. I don't love it, but I do love it for the research. And I did get to meet Gary Marcus at Black Hat because of Twitter and LinkedIn. So that was good because he's one of the originators of this field. So.
Okay. ChatGPT is adding images to, is adding more images to answers. It's going to be digging up more visual search, I guess, more product things you can compare off of. And you know what? This is a, As I'm reading up on this story, this is all about training ChatGPT. That's what this is.
Pretty much.
Seriously, so ChatGPT is going to be bringing back images along with the search. It's going to be asking you whether it's doing right or not, basically, and tracking your responses to it.
Pretty
That's
much.
Pretty cool. Good for them.
You're training. You're training. So, clicking images will appear when they add clarity. The web sourced images will appear next to the most relevant text. Clicking an image will let you see it in its original dimensions and the source attribution, so like regular search.
Oh, you know what? This is good. This is a really good thing. I can't see it being a terrible thing. I hope. I really, really, really hope that they become more accurate and better for users. So,
agreed.
Gary Ives on AI search. If anybody is going to be, I may be mischaracterizing Gary, and I'm really sorry if I do, but often I see him as kind of a kindred soul in the grumpy old man category of the world. I'm getting myself like banned from the bar at the next. Anyway, he's come right out. Basically, he's like, you know what? The change is hard to accept, but it's happening. And as it turns out, SEO is even more important than before, so it's not so bad after all. Is basically, I think that summarizes basically what he said.
Yeah, pretty much. He's been saying kind of similar things because when I first saw the story, I was like, "Is this week?" Because I think we covered it like last week or the week before. But it is a new story. It's a new a new set of words, but saying the same thing we just said. And he's quoting Fabrice Pinel from Microsoft. We really need to have him back on because he's really open about talking about how their stuff works, and that helps us all across the board. So,
so it's going to be, as in Gary's words, people are exploring through conversations. They're asking follow-up questions. They're not trolling through the blue links. And as they're doing this conversational research, they're building confidence. So when they get to the website, they actually know what they're looking for, what they're talking about. And I guess the consumer feels more empowered to make better decisions. So what I'm hearing in this is a how to say this? It's kind of like words of wisdom to marketers. This is why people are doing the conversational search journey through chatbots because they want to feel stronger before going to the website. Maybe providing them that conversation on your pages will help them feel comfortable when they're there.
Yeah, definitely possible. We'll just see how it goes. But one of the things he was talking about at the end of his what, presentation, I guess, is the right word. He's just talking about change, and it's one of the biggest changes in the past 20 years. Although they've been adding most of the stuff over the last decade, so some of it's really not that new. But if you're in SEO, you're in it because you enjoy the change. You can't be an SEO. I mean, when you started, Jim, did you think you might have to learn about how AI systems worked, or how natural language processing worked, or things like that. Entities, of course,
No, we were
no.
built, honestly, we were building a better library system. That's what it felt like then.
Exactly. So if you're in this industry, you have to like either the change because you like to learn new things, or because you just like change. So it's just another one of those times where we have to learn, adapt, and find another way to advise our clients to get traffic if they're not getting.
We might have to take a break for a sec. I can't hear you, Christine. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Nod yes, nod no.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
We need a break there. My phone, I thought it was disconnected from Bluetooth, and it wasn't.
Okay,
Sorry.
well, that's okay. Do you mind if while taking the break, I run and refill my coffee? Because
No,
it's
let's
bone
just.
dry empty, and that's terrifying.
I'm just gonna say, hey, Ricky, cut what we just did. Cut at the end of the story. We're gonna take a pause and then a 5 second so you can start up again.
Okay, back in 2 seconds,
I'm
okay?
gonna pause. Yeah. Okay, sorry for the what the fuck, Ricky. I couldn't find the pause. I was afraid we weren't recording. Now I'm stopping it on pause.
So, food creators are reporting massive traffic drops as as Google AI has found their recipes and it's rewriting them. It's bearing instructions, giving users unreal or unusable cooking tips, sometimes possibly unsafe cooking
Yeah.
tips. So,
No.
when you're I can't even imagine like people relying on Google results or Bing results this year about cooking their turkeys. And some people get it good, some people not. It's gonna be bizarre, eh?
Yeah, because well, I really feel bad for these people because they've been hit quite a bit in the past too. But the title of the article, Search Engine Land, Google and AI Slop are ruining Thanksgiving for food bloggers and possibly people who are going to eat the food.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so they've seen many food creators, according to the article, have lost between 30% and 80% of their organic traffic. And the AI-generated recipe slop is flooding Pinterest too, and Facebook and Etsy. And so these people that do these recipe sites, if they're successful, they test the recipes, they know the recipes, they've checked everything. They've made modifications for you. In this case, they said that there's things like 40% year decline, 40% year-over-year decline on one site, replaced by AI summaries that even get basics wrong, like baking a 6-inch Christmas cake for 3 to 4 hours. The guy's like, you'll end up with charcoal. Frankenstein recipes, Adam Gallagher of Inspired Taste, that Google mixes the ingredients with competitors' instructions, even for brand name searches. So his cocktail click-through rate has dropped by 30%. And then an AI stealing the show, Gemini's new interactive recipe graphics remix creators' photos, and of course plagiarizing the recipes. It's all stolen content. Again, that's my problem with AI in general. It's all stolen content. But then to put it out so badly.
Well, in this case, like in the case of things like recipes, this is the LLM acting exactly as the LLM is supposed to act, but
Exactly.
just by the nature of the LLM, you can't trust the damn recipe because, I mean, like,
Well, so
it's
there's a
just
real.
putting in what. Okay, so if a half cup is used most frequently, a half cup of sugar is the thing that is most frequent. Then a half cup of sugar is what it's going to be, even if it was supposed
Exactly.
to be a half pinch of salt.
And because they're supposed, because in regular search, they ground them in a bunch of articles that are, so they have less chance of being wrong. You can't ground a personal recipe in other recipes because the recipe might be different. If I put in gluten-free cheesecake, I'm going to get 50 different recipes, all slightly different, right? So you can't ground it in anything to make sure it's accurate. So who knows? Somebody may put in a cup of sugar in your, chicken pot pie. You never know. But that's their recipe, and there's no way to really check it with the rag with the other articles. So they're going to be more wrong probably than other things. I do feel really bad for these people though, because these are individual creators most of the time who have put like a lot of sweat and tears into creating a following and putting the recipes up and testing them for people. And there's like a low carb channel I follow for, low sugar, gluten free. And it'd just be such a shame if that channel went away because they lost all their traffic through really bad AI that shouldn't be using it in the first place. It would be really easy for Google not to do this with recipes, because there's so many indicators that something is a recipe. They could literally just say, "Don't summarize this," but they do, unfortunately. So,
Good.
I feel bad for I do feel bad for the recipe creators, but be careful. Don't get your recipes from AI Overviews or AMO, because, like I said, you might cook your 6-inch cake for 4 hours, and you can wonder why you have a piece of charcoal when it's all done.
If you work with an agency, you probably have a number of clients, and those clients are probably share Google Ads. Or Google Analytics profiles, set up through your agency. Those are often on what are called MCCs, string of profiles that all lead back to the agency-centered account. They're getting hacked. Now, the cool thing about the MCC is you get access to one, you get access to all. So, hacking one MCC for an agency can bring you to one, two, 10, or X number of clients.
Yeah, and the issue is, according to Search Engine Roundtable reporting, is that Craig Skelko posted on LinkedIn that his entire company's MCC was hijacked at 12:30 a.m. But they had two factor, so they're not sure how it could have happened, because the two factor is supposed to help prevent that, because only you have the code, or only you have the information that they require for the two factor.
Then it goes back
So,
to a trusted cell phone or a trusted email address, and
right.
some other action has to be taken to authenticate. Yeah.
And he wrote that neither I nor anyone on his team can access it or any of our accounts. We received emails
Well.
of an unknown administrative user being added, and the person linked their own MCC to many of our accounts. That's all they know.
I'll
They
bet you
re
ten
in
bucks. I'll bet you $10 that their 2FA went back to the email account associated with their MCC. And if they had access to the MCC, they had access to that damn email account.
yeah, that's true
That'd be my
too.
guess.
Yeah, that's a good point. So I have seen people talking about this in the industry, like just in your regular channels. And it is a big problem because they can't seem to get much response from Google, like when I've seen it talked about. And they don't know how to get their MCCs back. So
You don't. That's the problem. Once they're compromised, I'm not sure how you get them back either. You change all your authentication and passwords, but you've been locked out from it. Now you're in a catch-22 situation. You need to be able to log in to be able to make changes, but you can't log in because someone stopped you.
exactly. Google has evidence that the bad actors are using phishing emails. So they send out something that looks like a real email from Google that you click on, and of course you log in with, and they have your password and your email address. Dormant accounts, so delete inactive or dormant accounts, because these are ripe for hijacking. logins from new or unrecognized devices. If you see something like that happening on your account, make sure to follow up with your team. And why is that happening? Because sometimes it just happens. Sometimes Google forgets that my computer is my computer, but you want to follow up and make sure. But the phishing is going to be the biggest way this is happening. And I have seen some people post the emails that they've received and the phishing attempts, and they look very, very legitimate. So do things like make sure you check the email address where it came from before you click on anything, and make sure you look at the link that you're about to click on. If it's, you feel it's something Google really sent, or you could go on social and ask a representative from Google, did you send this? Jenny, for the ad liaison, Jenny Marvin would probably definitely answer you. So.
Okay. Moving along. Nano Banana, Google's incredible imaging generation tool is now Nano Banana Pro, and it's even more incredible. It is now on Google Search and in Google Ads. It's again, it's the difference between an old Polaroid camera and the newest multi-pixel digital cameras.
Yeah, it's a really good product. I find that it's not Nano, but I tried to use Gemini. It's extremely restrictive. I try to generate images as testing on things that it should have generated. It's like, no, we can't do that. I'm like, okay. It doesn't tell you why. By the way, we skipped over the Thanksgiving doodle. There was an important part of that story.
Doodle goes back to AI mode.
No, what important part was, it doesn't tell you anything about the doodle.
Oh, that's right. It used to tell you all about the thing, the Google Doodle, but now clicking on it just goes back to AI mode.
Yeah, and it gives you information about like Thanksgiving dinner, but it doesn't tell you actually anything about the doodle, which is sad because a lot of times those are individuals, you know, that get a little recognition through the doodle. So.
Okay, so AI search is, how to say this? AI search is changing what content ranks, and in that, it's sort of redrawing the rules about where your brand might belong and how your brand might be represented, like in what language it might be represented when it's
International
there.
and international. Yeah, we didn't specify. This is international SEO.
Well, yeah, indeed. So yeah. I'm an international SEO, or just not in America, so I often think globally.
Yeah,
So this was written by Motoko Hunt, who is the
she's amazing.
Well, no,
yeah.
She's the international SEO. If she's
she
she's she's the source on international SEO.
If she's writing about it, you know it's an issue. She says that in the Search Engine Journal article, AI search isn't just changing what content ranks. It's quietly redrawing where your brand appears to belong. As large language models synthesize results across languages and markets, they blur the boundaries that once kept content localized. Traditional geographic signals such as hreflang, ccTLDs, regional schema are being bypassed, misread, or overridden by global defaults. The result, your English site becomes the truth for all markets, while your local teams wonder why their traffic and conversions are vanishing. So apparently, the classic search location was explicit. IP, language, market-specific domains dictated what you saw. Hreflang told Google which market variant to serve. Local content lived on the distinct ccTLDs or subdirectories supported by region-specific backlinks and meta. AI breaks all of those codes. So basically, often the language is dominant. I saw this a long time ago, and it may have been when they were testing like original AI stuff, because it was like I was working for Zappos, and I'd put in a term for something on the Zappos site that was in Italian, and suddenly every search result was Italian. So it went away after a month or two. It's about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, but it's a similar thing now. AI systems treat language as a proxy for geography. So a Spanish query could represent Mexico, Colombia, or Spain. But you're not in any of those, or you can wind up with the English language website. Market aggregation bias is the second thing she mentions that is a problem. So during training, LLMs learn from corpus distributions that are heavily favored English content, and when related entities appear across markets, Global Chem Mexico, Global Chem Japan, the model's representations are dominated by whichever instance has the most training examples, like we talked about before with recipes. Canonical amplification. Search engines naturally try to consolidate near identical pages, and hreflang exists to counter that bias by telling them similar versions are valid alternates for different markets. But when AI systems try to retrieve these, they inherit the hierarchy, treating the canonical version as the primary source of truth. So that, without using other explicit geographic signals, they may have a problem. So she's not sure if it'll self-correct or not, but if you're in the international market, I definitely suggest you read this, How AI's Geo Identification Failures Are Rewriting International SEO, because you are likely seeing these issues with the more and more they roll out the AI.
Well, that's a problem that webmasters might see more and more in the future. But you know what you're definitely going to see more and more? You're going to see more Google ads and AI modes. Google's apparently done testing how ads and AI mode are going to look. And they're introduced them in the wild. They're out there. And I don't know exactly how you trigger them. I guess you'd have to do some like search for something you could buy or contract or something you could bring on. But yeah, ads are out there. You seen them yet?
I have not seen, or I didn't. I don't use AI mode though, so I probably have to go do some testing there. They are showing the organic links above the AI mode, so that's good. The ads aren't on top, but yeah, more people are stumbling across them. But you're right, it's just in testing phase, so they don't really have a consistent presence yet. But if you thought you were going to get AI mode with just text, you are not.
Well, no, I mean, this is Google signaling that generative results are going to be a dominant feature in search results in the future. And moreover, generative results are going to start appearing in a number of other places. Say you're working on a Google Doc or in a Google spreadsheet, and Google finds a reason to stuff it in there. Or maybe, you know, you ask Google to help you do Gemini to do a calculation for you. Don't be surprised if within the result sets that you get, you also see ads relating to whatever you're working on. Why
Well,
not?
let's hope it's not in spreadsheets. That would be pretty annoying. But yeah,
I would be.
Google, that's Sundar's one claim to fame. Like he's degraded search over his tenure. He's done a lot of things that have been negative for people that pay Google for ads, but he finds a way to make new ads or hide ads. Hide that they're ads, and he makes more money on ads every quarter. So, you know, all the stockholders are happy.
Well, again, if you're going to be the CEO of a ad-driven company, making money on ads every quarter is a good way to keep your job.
Very true, very true. Although long term, I think they're going to suffer because, you know, if your websites don't need to pay you for ads anymore because they can't get clicks, they may harm you in the long term.
Well, yeah, but the market for attention is changing, with the largest, you know, the technopolies taking a lot of that attention away from the smaller players. They don't need the publishers advertising in AdWords or in even passing ads through AdSense so much anymore. They just need, you know, manufacturers and brand names to advertise with them, and Google will take that entire market. If 50% isn't going out to the publishers, then Google's retaining that 50%.
Yeah,
Search volume's still high.
I was working for one of the largest spender of ads, not Amazon, about 2019, and they decided to pull all their ad money from Google and put it into influencers because they're a fashion brand. And I just see if they continue to degrade the amount of clicks that websites get, one, they won't have money for ads. And two, you could see them looking for better opportunities to make money off of their money that's limited. So it's just my thought, but we'll
No,
see.
no, I mean, I totally see where you're going. I mean, the law of unintended consequences could degrade their own ecosystem so much that, you know, people find other places to spend their money.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just my thought. But we'll see what happens in the long term. But anyway, you're not getting away from ads. Also, you're not getting away from ads in other GPT platforms because we know that OpenAI is looking at ads, Perplexity is looking at ads. So you will
Oh,
be
again, there's got to be. I mean,
gotta be
remember
revenue
Google.
somewhere.
Yeah, remember how much money Google was making off those little teeny, like three-line box ads?
Yeah.
Insane oodles, like absorbent amounts of money. Not necessarily enough for cost recovery of the early part of the AI revolution, but definitely enough to put a dent in the bill.
Yeah, for sure. And when Google first started, the reason they got some of their biggest funding was because of their infinite revenue model, which was the ads and ad bidding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So again, now imagine if you could somehow slip an ad into almost every digital interaction that somebody had, if as long as they're within your ecosystem, right? Like the Google productivity suites or Microsoft productivity suites. Why can't Copilot start slipping in advertising into your Word documents?
Well, let's hope not the tools. I don't want a product where I'm looking at ads while I'm trying to compose
Now, there was a
something.
Black Mirror episode like that, wasn't there?
I know I haven't watched Black Mirror. Came out during the
Well,
pandemic and I couldn't handle anything more dark than cooking shows
oh, you know, now that we're in
and
much
Jane the
better
Virgin.
times, you might try Black Mirror.
Yeah,
It's
probably. I used to love shows
actually
like that. I used to love
Black
them.
Mirror is sometimes more pleasant than the news. Okay, moving right along, and speaking of the news, the ecosystem online has been funded by advertising. Like that's how free the web's favorite four-letter word starts with an F, but it isn't what you might think it is. It's free, because you know since the dawn of the web, we've been conditioned that information has to be free and available to everyone. Well, information is free and often available to everyone, but it costs a lot to put that information together. And advertising has been the, in a way, that people have paid for it all. Thing is, AI answers are actually totally and demonstrably disrupting publisher revenues, and because the advertising ecosystem is being disrupted, people don't got to click, those ads don't got to fire, those ads don't fire, publisher don't get paid. So,
Yeah. Oh,
whose
go ahead.
study is this?
Oh, you'd ask me while I'm looking lower on the page. Oh, by the way, it's an article in Search Engine Land. By the way, do we know the fate of Search Engine Land from the buyout yet from Semrush
It's
and
still
Adobe?
publishing.
Still publishing that is true.
The fate, they're still publishing. This was a Guardian article, and the Guardian recently noted that sites that previously ranked first can lose up to 79% of traffic when pushed below an AI overview. So for a publisher, that's apocalyptic.
Oh yeah, it's apocalyptic because I do site recoveries, right? So I see sites all the time that are down 50% or more. It's apocalyptic at 20%.
Well,
Like they have such thin margins.
How about
So
if you were like DMG Media in September 2025, reporting an 89% drop in click-through rates directly because AI overviews were giving people type in, what does DMG Media cover? And DMG Media's coverage comes up for them. Zero-click searches now make up about 60% of Google's mobile queries, and AI overviews are appearing for about a third of process searches.
yeah, and we still get back to the origins of all this. This is somebody else's content that they're rewriting. So these publishers have a news story and it might be trending and viral, but Google hits it first with the ad overview that they did not write. And then they lose the traffic because people think they've satisfied their query. So ad-dependent publishers, according to the article, lose 40 to 60% of their search traffic, which is their main source of business and revenue. Subscription models are faltering because the users never hit the paywall. So AI pulls a snippet into the results. Although I have to say the paywall model is not one that I'm a big fan of. I think there's other methods, but right now that is the method they have decided to use, even like Reuters. Because getting ready
Yeah.
for this show every week is tough now. I hit so many paywalls
Well,
on
yeah,
stuff
but
that used to not have paywalls.
so what's a publisher to do? I just got dinged on my credit card about 150 Canadian dollars, which is, translates into, I don't know, maybe 100, 110, 115 American, for Toronto Star Digital Services. It's the largest newspaper in Canada. I guess it's America's equivalent would be the New York Times, all. Though I dare say the Star takes more care in its coverage. The Star is a little more dedicated to fact checking. The cost of the ecosystem is staggering. So for And I'm paying the subscription mostly because it's my hometown paper. I feel someone's gotta.
Yeah.
And if a bunch of someone's do it, then maybe it can sustain itself. But even now, even with my $150 a month and assumably tens of thousands of other people in the city, paper's still struggling badly. What are publishers to do? The paywalls are, well, again, favorite four-letter F word has always been free. But we're information users are nickel and dimed for everything now. I mean, do you
Oh, yeah.
really want publishing to be a lot like the streaming services have turned out?
And you know who doesn't charge are the propaganda papers, the fake news information, the misinformation. They don't charge. So
Well, you
people
know
get that
what?
information and they don't get the real information.
Now that Grok is like, seriously getting into the generative answers game, it's only a matter of time till they start losing revenue too.
Yeah, that's very true. I had an idea for a model that publishers could make tons of money off of and then never have to put up a paywall. And I went to the Columbia School of Journalism because they were working with publishers at the time, their board was, and they rejected it because they didn't understand digital. So I was kind of sad. I was just gonna give it to them because I just feel the press is so important. Free press is so important. But a lot of them though don't even give like one article now or two articles because I do this a lot for the grid right each week. And I just hit paywall after paywall after paywall, and it's like I don't even bother trying to find a way around it anymore. Just like I can't afford to pay for like 20 subscriptions a month. I pay for about five of the ones we regularly report on. So, but it is a real problem. But so most the article says the ones that are most affected are the mid-sized niche and affiliate sites. And affiliate doesn't necessarily mean the affiliate marketing side. It could just be that's how that publisher makes money is by having affiliate sales from their site. And AI now satisfies more than half of all queries related to publishers. That's a really hard place for a publisher to be because they can't just, like, you can find if you're just like an e-commerce store or a regular information site, you can find long-term queries where the AI overview does not pop and you can make up some of your traffic that way. But if you're a publisher, you're writing mostly to trending news or topics, and so you really can't. That's a
Well,
really hard place. Yeah.
indeed, and again, if the searcher feels like their query has been answered without actually having to read the whole 2 to 5 to 10 minute article in your publication, then they still the weirdest thing is they still might be brand loyal to you, but they're not clicking through to you.
Yeah,
I
exactly.
trust information from that publisher. Haven't been to their site in months, but I really trust them.
Yeah, exactly. It's really tough place for publishers, and I wish there was an easy solution or some sort of suggestion we could give them. It's really not. Even Barry Adams, who's worked with some of the largest publishers in the world, wrote a thing on LinkedIn this week about how he doesn't know how to advise them anymore
Well,
because they're not listening to what he's telling them to do, of course.
yo, number one thing, listen to Barry Adams. Like, listen to Barry.
Right,
That's the one thing you
exactly.
do, and then Barry will be able to tell you what to do because your successes
Exactly.
will help him build new successes for you.
But
Like,
he did say that it's very difficult though because it is so much of the traffic's being diverted. So, but yeah.
well, I mean, here's the thing. In the AI world, what I'm telling all of my clients now is traffic numbers are going to be wonky. They're going to fall. They're certainly not indicative of the number of people who are actually interested in you, because we know for a fact that we're losing clicks to AI overviews. We can even see how AI mode or AI overviews treat your brand if we do these searches. And you know what? My information query is satisfied. I do not need to go to your page. So clicks are going down. Visibility is everything.
Yeah.
But what does that really mean, right? Like, getting seen, getting known.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
People know this information came from you. This product comes from you. That this law of 26 mentions gets your name imprinted in the back of their head. Is that how it's going to work?
It has to, you have to diversify, also reestablish things like newsletters or communities around your brand. So if you're a publisher, create maybe discussion areas or a newsletter that comes out or some feature. Atlantic does a very good job. The CEO of Atlantic does videos on LinkedIn sometimes every day, and he talks about the top topics that they're covering. And he's very engaging in the videos. I watch almost no videos on LinkedIn because they're all just kind of boring business, like same business thing over and over again. But his are very interesting. They're very, he explores the topic, when he's talking about it. And so, the Atlantic, and the Atlantic is like a brand that most of my friends wouldn't have known about 5 years ago, but now, like everyone I know reads the Atlantic and shares the Atlantic. So there are publishers that are doing a good job on getting alternate clicks outside just the straight organic blue
I
links.
mean, visibility is one thing, but as Christine said, you have to do visibility and then offer extra. Like they have to know you and know that they're going to get something extra when they come to you. And in that extra, I think, is where the new revenue model is going to be found, but that's probably going to involve a paywall.
The couple of suggestions from Search Engine Land were publishers with unique analysis or exclusive data hold on. Sorry, my kitty cat walked on my keyboard.
That's right. You need to be, you need to register to get this specific data.
Yes, exactly. Or you can earn AI citations that way. You won't get a lot of clicks from AI. We know it's less than 2% of referrals for most people, but it's still some clicks. And then, like I said, newsletters and building audience and community. The ones that do really well, there's one called Courier News that was kind of oblivious for 5 years and now suddenly is getting prominence. And that's because they do a lot on social media with special reels and special interviews, special TikTok lives, things like that. So there's ways to boost your brand. So people will come organically, but they'll come from another source first. So.
And if that can get them on, if that can get them across your pages, perhaps you can make money on ad revenues.
Exactly.
But honestly, if you're a publisher, find another revenue source, because you can't depend on Google. I mean, remember, these are Google ads that you're making money off of. Google has a
Yeah.
vested interest in taking that money from you.
Yeah, and a final thing is make sure that in the places that you can be followed, like Discover and then Google, even on desktop has like a news, favorite news site that your followers, your people that read you know that, and it's prominent on your site, so that those users will be fed your content more likely than just in the organic straight results. So in Discover, you'll be fed that topic first. In the carousel for news, you'll be fed that site
Well,
in your news stories.
then I suppose the other thing that makes a lot of sense is create content specifically for Discover and specifically for news. Video he video heavy with an explanation around it.
Yeah,
The
especially
kind of stuff that
shorts.
they'd love to serve up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's just you got to diversify your revenue model and your organic placements. And your SEO team is usually your best ones to start that with because they know everywhere you need to be.
Oh, and I guess one last point. Sorry to beat on this dying horse so
Yeah,
badly, but the last thing isn't for publishers. It's actually for all of us. Information isn't free anymore. That was in the infancy of the web, and we've grown into middle age, I'm afraid. And everything is more expensive when you're middle age, believe me. And like the web isn't free anymore. If you want access to the really good stuff, especially if, and especially if it involves, all your specific interest or work, you're likely going to have to pay for it. Ask SEOs involved in the tool market. They'll tell you. Free is
but
over.
I really think I should have a podcast or subscription model, though. It's like we're doing 30, 40 stories a week. I cannot afford all those publishers every month. Like, give me a dollar option, And can you prove you have a podcast with a certain following? Yeah,
You
here's your
know,
dollar option.
the way
We're
around
promoting
that
them.
is more sponsors. All we got to
Yeah.
do is get more sponsors and they can pay for our subscriptions.
Exactly.
Okay.
By the way, our
We got to
sponsors. Well, we mentioned them. We did mention them,
We
but
already
yeah.
mentioned them. We mentioned them. We'll
Yeah,
mention them again, I promise.
as we're sure to skip them.
Well, Audience
Okay.
Key and Wix Studio. We're not skipping you, but we, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Changes are coming to Google Maps. Some are kind of cool. Some are kind of weird. I don't know what they're thinking, but the biggest change, there's three changes that we're going to talk about. The biggest one is reviewer nicknames. Google is going to let people who, in their review program, I'm a Google reviewer. I've reviewed a number of places around Toronto, and I think it's a nice thing to do if, for a business. But you have to do it under your real name so that Google knows that this is a real person who's having a real experience at a real business, writing a real review, and not some marketing bot coming up with AI slog to pump up a business of some sort or another. Google's going to be letting people use nicknames rather than their actual name. They figure that their security measures are strong enough to prevent review fraud or even worse, review extortion. But there you go.
Well, and I understand, so I was wondering, why would you do anonymous reviews? But then I drove down the road and I'm in Las Vegas and there's something called the Adult Store. And the Adult Store is a real store of adult things. And they're actually quite large. They're probably about, 20,000, 30,000 square feet. And I'm sure people don't leave many reviews for the Adult Store because your name and last name are now associated with the Adult Store. So
Well, yes, but I mean, there's a whole bunch of other types of businesses out there too. Like, poodles of
sure.
other types of businesses.
Oh, sure. We have legal cannabis here. I understand the reason why anonymous might be something that decided to do because we have like cannabis stores here. We have a cannabis lounge here. There may be people that don't want to associate their name with that, so they don't get reviews, and reviews heavily factor into your ranking in Google Maps and local business. So I could see why they did it. I also can see the concern though is that people could try to do nasty things to a competitor. Let's say we know that's never happened. With not having a real name, then the store itself doesn't have an easy way to address it other than just through the Google review process. So, but I do see why living in Vegas, I do see a number of businesses here where you probably would not leave a review with your name attached, even if you had a really positive experience, because you wouldn't want your name associated with the Love Boutique or the adult store or the cannabis lounge. So.
I don't know a lot about the Love Boutique or the Love Store, but I do know quite a bit about cannabis lounges. It just so happens. And I'm gonna tell you straight up, people who are attracted to any of these businesses don't need a review to get them through the door.
No, they don't. But we have a lot of dispensaries in Vegas. So you want to know which dispensary is best, reviews would be helpful. And because they all operate differently for different markets. Closer to the strip, you get like a experience. Out in my area, it's like a going into a Whole Foods. So it just depends on what you're comfortable with. So there's quite differences in those and who they cater to when it comes to the adult stuff. Right. So I could see it being helpful for people. But anyway, I could see why they would have anonymous reviews. I just think it might be potential problems.
I
We
had a
also
business once. That got review extorted.
Yeah, we know
And so
somebody that.
I'm totally on the other side of the equation here. I don't care about the adult boutique, and I really don't care if like that if the pothead wants to keep themselves anonymous or not. Honest to goodness, if it's such a big concern, don't write the damn review. But I don't know. I mean, like, if we were able to identify the person who was so heavily attacking my client's business at the onset of this extortion stuff would have saved them a lot of time,
Oh,
a
I
lot of money,
agree.
and a lot of
I agree. We know a friend that had 99.9% 5-star reviews, all legit, thousands of them, and some guy literally not being facetious here in his basement, a hacker got mad at them, and he halved their reviews down to like 3 stars with fake reviews, and even Google didn't do much to help them, so they had to no way to easily recover their 5-star review. So yeah, I agree. But I'm just saying, I understand why they consider doing this. Their businesses people just will not review.
Well,
So.
Google is also going to give you an ability to swipe up on an Explore tab to find like stuff that's trending, stuff that's becoming really like popular based on clicks or based on mentions in other media. So you'll get a trending tab. And also, what if you just wanted to know the insider goods, like where you should park or the easiest way to get from point A to point B to get into a restaurant or the secret menu items or something? Well, that ain't such insider information anymore if Google Gemini is going to be just offering it to anybody who looks for it, but Google's Gemini is going to be doing that.
So I think what they do is they ask you a series of questions because I get these. I've gotten them in the past, but now I'm getting every time I go somewhere, not just when I leave a review. And they're asking a whole bunch of questions of yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. I don't get to like put in a comment, but they're based, I think, on reviews that people have left. So, because some of them are just weird questions, like why would you ask that? So I think that must be where it's coming from. But yeah, it's interesting. Like Vegas has a lot of secret menus and secret doors. I went to meet a friend at a restaurant, the other coffee house, the other day. I couldn't find how to get in until I went on Google and it showed the secret door to the place. So it is very helpful, especially if you live in a town like mine.
If you were looking for a hotel in Google's Hotel Center and you didn't see it there, it could be under the suspended hotels tab. But you won't see it under the suspended hotel tab for much longer because Google has degraded, de depreciated this the suspended hotels tab and reinstated all those suspended hotels back into their normal listings. Confused? I know I was till I read a little bit further. So what happened
But
is, I'm sorry, go for it, Christine.
oh, okay. I'm sorry. It's Google. This is Google's official statement on it. The suspension tool was originally created as a way to quickly deactivate properties, often due to price accuracy issues. Now, with both live on Google and improved automated removal of inaccurate prices. Oh my gosh, Thanksgiving got me. With PA Insights, it's easier than ever for partners to resolve price accuracy issues and quickly deactivate any properties. So they said it really shouldn't impact you much. We don't want to see any negative impact on the rollout. If you do see negative impact, be very vocal on social and tag them. But yeah, so I when they say removal, automated removal, they mean using large language models and AI to remove those items. So that'll be good though, I guess, because a lot of people were put in those suspended categories just for pricing differences. So,
Okay. Google's made a change to its gambling ads policies, and it's made offline advertising for offline gambling illegal in countries where offline gambling happens to be illegal. So if you live in a place like Afghanistan, Northern Ireland, Pakistan, Libya, Singapore, Thailand, and many, many, many others, you will not be seeing, as of last week, you will not be seeing offline gambling ads. Again, it's just making its gambling and gaming policy conform to various national laws.
yeah, which makes sense. So.
Which makes sense, yeah. Although, say you're going to on a vacation to, I don't know, maybe Las Vegas. You wouldn't see ads for certain destinations as well either, or at least
We're
not
not
gambling ads.
in those countries. Yeah, if you came from those countries, you could get them here. But yeah, you're right. You're right. But if you're, I get why company doesn't want to violate the laws of the country that they're operating in. So you'll just
Okay,
have to
so
wait till you get to that area to search for it. Like you come to Vegas and search for it, you'll find it. So.
Google is testing limiting the number of local service ads that are shown within the web search results by removing the More Results button. Used to be, you'd be able to hit More and expand results to see the number of local search ads, local service ad listings. Now you're going to be given sort of like an accordion option. You'll be able to expand the results, but you'll see 8 in total, and that'll be it.
Yeah, it seems like an odd play to me for Google because LSA ads like can people might bid very high because they're paying for a qualified lead supposedly because Google will refund the unqualifieds. And so to limit the number of ads people can appear in, but maybe it's just people were unhappy with being placed so low. Like once you have to hit the more, how many people are actually going to those ads, maybe? But these ads are
Yes.
based on performance. They're not based on just showing. They're not impression ads. They're based on clicks.
Yeah, but I mean, like, even if you're bidding yourself like onto 10th, 12th, 14th space and nobody's clicking, all that bidding is for naught. I mean, you're not even
So,
advertising. So maybe Google's creating like an environment where those who do participate will get noticed, but they're also creating a scarcity thing,
that's true
which
too,
means
where you
more
might bid
money.
higher and you bid higher. Yeah, because these ads can. We were researching LSAs for a company I'm working for, and they can pay as much as $1,000 per lead if it's like someone in legal, like those lawsuits, class actions. So. Yeah, they can be
Well,
very, very expensive. You only pay for the click, but still, they can be very, very expensive. So if you make less of them, people will probably bid more to be there.
The most expensive keyword of all time was
Yes.
mesothelioma,
I was
which
thinking of
was
it because
trading
you
at
got to
one
say
time above
it.
1,000 a click just to get the lead. So
Crazy.
Google's going to be taking away a number of those spaces, again, by removing the more button. They're effectively taking away everything below position eight. But they're giving advertisers a little bit more power within the local service ad environment. They're getting new buttons. For instance, a button that would read "Get competitive quotes" or "Request multiple opinions" can come up, which, people will click that and take into your site. There you go. You get traffic.
The hard part though is you're now paying to be one of five or one of ten. Just like when someone comes to you about a job, Jim, and they go, "We're shopping proposals," and you go, "Oh, do I want to waste the time on that?"
I
Because
always
you're
assume
not.
that's happening anyway, so.
Actually, mine are normally direct referrals, so it's a rarity. It's like probably one out of every 20 or 30 that I talk to. But with their shopping proposals, the marketing firm with the slick sales guy and the slick presentation is probably going to get the work. Not me, the independent consultant. So I'm just saying, I could see like this could also be if you're paying for these click feeds, and someone's just able to kick a button and get like goes to everybody. Now everybody's paying for that click, even though the person didn't select a specific individual. They didn't do the research. They're just like getting options. So it may turn out to be detrimental for the companies in certain areas. It may not be detrimental like a plumbing company, but it may be for a law firm. Something of that nature, where you need someone to specifically want to hire you, by understanding your brand or your successes, that kind of thing. So we'll
Well,
see.
yeah, we'll see how it works out. Google usually finds a happy median between Google making oodles of money and Google providing excellent service for the people who are giving it oodles of money. Although it tends to fall on the Google makes oodles of money side of things these days. So
True.
we'll see.
They also find the middle between complete rebellion and making noodles of money. So,
Okay, so people with Google business profiles, and this is for people with Google business profiles with multiple locations of their businesses. Google's launching a it's officially, this has come out of testing. They were testing this for a couple of months, but this is like official now. Scheduling a multi-location publishing for Google Posts. So you can like plan out an entire month. And moreover, you can plan out an entire month and camp and location-based campaigns. So you can have an, going east to west or north to south. You can release information at specific times and in specific locations. And I think it's very cool.
yeah, I mean, if you're like, let's just say restaurant business, right? Chain restaurants in the United States, you might be, I don't know exactly how many Applebee's has, but I know it's around 2,000 or more locations. And so before you didn't have the ability to just say, in this locale, we're going to offer this special on this day. And now they can just push it to one, or they can push it to 10, or they can push it to all 2,000. But they can be very granular in how they promote, which is
Buy
huge.
strippers at Grenville Applebee's.
Exactly. But it's huge for business, especially small ones like in Vegas. We have a lot of regional chains, so there may only be like 6 or 10 locations, but they also don't have big media teams or big SEO teams to like do all that work. So it'll be nice, and they'll do it individually at a click of a button.
So in July, Google announced it was it, Google introduced WebGuide, which is an AI search results page that was, basically an experiment in how Google finds surfaces and organizes results across the web based on you, the web user. If you can visualize a search results page in your mind, and you have the little tab across the top that gives you a number of different options, AI mode, all images, shopping, etc. In the all tab, web guide search results are showing up much more often.
Yeah, even internationally, Kevin Indig saw it as well.
The interesting thing is it's AI organizing search results, not AI writing its opinion of all those search results. So maybe you get Netflix out of it.
You know, it's funny. Most companies follow Google, even Bing, but this is a little more similar to what Bing does for their pages. Like if I go and do news stories for the show, sometimes I get a AI box at the top, AI and news, or just news, or and it's arranged differently in the page. They've been talking about doing this for a long time. And by the way, people should know there is a process called Tanagram in previous search results that organize the page too. So this isn't a completely new idea, but it does get rid of the overview box. And you know what, Jim? I opted out of getting AI overviews by going to the web tab and had been seeing pages that looked like the web tab, but I'm like, but I'm not in the web tab right now. So I didn't even realize that it had moved, right? I'm just like, well, this looks like the web tab. The web tab was where you could not have the AI overview, but where they've been testing these kind of layouts. And I just like it so much better because it's cleaner. It's just it looks like a fairly standard page. I don't have to search through a dozen things that Google added I don't care about, like 10 boxes from Reddit when it's like, what medication can I give my cat? I don't want a Reddit opinion on that, right? So it's a much better page. People should go over to search engine. Is it Roundtable? Yeah, Search Engine Roundtable. Google Web Guide shows an alt tab for more searches, and just take a look at it so you'll know when you see it. It just looks like a much more classic Google links result, which will encourage publishers to get clicks, which is really important to us getting news and information, right? It's one of the most important things, I think. And then the web guide will have an AI overview, but often it's like a little bit farther down the page and it's smaller and it doesn't take up so much information. It's not even quite as noticeable. So I think it's a positive. What do you think, Jim?
I think it's a great idea. Again, if Google's holy grail for as long as we've been doing this, Google's holy grail has been personalization. This isn't personalization like 100% personalization, but it is arranging search results based on Google's perception or Gemini's perception of what you really want. A step closer to Google's holy grail of personalization. Most importantly, though, these are blue links. These aren't the rewriting of content found under that search query bucket. It's not the rewriting of that stuff isn't even necessarily the top 10 in the search results. Now, what I'm really interested in is how are these results organized for the individual user? How's that process actually happening? We'll learn that over time, I guess.
So there is a hint in the images from there. And I like I said, I've been getting this but didn't notice because I thought I was in the web and I'm like, well, I think I'm in all. Why am I getting web? But anyway, at the very top of the page on some of the screenshots, it says show all quick matches. I guess it's quick matches are personalization. So instead of intermixing the personalization like they always have, if you have personalization on where they put one or two personal results and like let's just say the 10 blue links, ignoring everything else. In this case, it says show quick matches, then it says web guide, and on the right it says classic search, and that's 10 blue links with a very small AI overview at the top. So I find it interesting they call it classic search. So there's quick matches and then there's classic search, which is just your 10 blue links. And then sometimes on the right hand side in some of the images you will see a whole list of items there, and those items are, let me pull it up so I make sure I get the wording right. Yeah, so the this is from Glenn Gabby. They show, oh shoot. Sorry, I'm looking at a page, guys. Image. I want to make sure I get the wording right. And I'm not seeing the image I'm looking at. There we go. Yeah, so they put stuff on the right-hand side too, and it just looks like it's possibly some of the grounding or just some extra items like knowledge graph. But I really like these so much better. It's so much cleaner. Just my eyes are just like, ah, there's white space. And I can easily see what's on the page, and I don't have to try to figure out what I'm looking at.
One thing I'm feeling pretty good about this story. Remember a few months ago, we've been saying this for a while. Microsoft and Bing is starting to fill the role that Ask.com used to fill in the search world, where it was doing really cool, innovative things that everybody else like cribbed off of later.
Yeah, very true. Before
And
AI, too.
if Google wants to steal really good ideas from Bing in how to treat AI content or how to deal with AI in the organization of search content, I'm all for it. Seriously, if it makes a better search engine, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I really am too, because as we've talked about before, I find that Bing's handling of AI and its like posting publishers, things like that, is much better and much more conducive to the people that are actually, they took the content from.
Yeah,
So.
now Fabrice, on behalf of Christine, I'm sorry. We just told Google to steal from you. I know that. But you do keep making this cool stuff. So
Yeah, it's just so much better. It's just an easier page to look at on Bing. And also the publishers get blocks of little bits of content about the article. So you a card, right? So you will click on it as opposed to just this tiny little link to the right that you may or may not get a actual search result from. Because sometimes let's go back to Google. So yeah.
Okay, so
Some fast
we've been talking
stories.
about a lot about Google Ads recently,
Oh gosh,
and
yeah.
it turns out you're going to see them in more places, including Facebook Messenger and Zalo, a Vietnamese instant messaging service. Google has now introduced a tab in its ad platform that will allow you to direct messages or to direct ads to Facebook Messenger, to WhatsApp, and to Zalo.
Yeah, since we don't do, ads as a living, you and I have to admit, I feel kind of naive here. I didn't know Google had ads inside of Facebook.
Oh yeah,
Because Facebook has its
Google.
own ads program, so
Well,
yeah.
Google will feed ads anywhere it can possibly feed ads, and it's an infinitely more efficient system than anybody else's system is. And think of it for Facebook, you don't have to support all this ad serving infrastructure. You just have to let Google give you 50% of the revenue off of theirs.
Yeah, that's probably why it is. It just surprised me because I did not know that Google had access to Facebook advertising spaces internally. So.
Well, and Messenger, remember Facebook Messenger is kind of Facebook, but it's also kind of its own standalone application.
Yeah, that's true too. And WhatsApp too. WhatsApp's another one of the places where you can see the ads. So
Yeah.
I was just surprised. I did not know that. So I learned something new every day. Google expands what to know in web search products in the summary bar. So we talked about this, what you need to know kind of concept before, or what to know
Okay,
in
so
web search. Yeah.
this is like inside information, except about products.
Exactly. And it's based on I think it's based, if I remember correctly, because I don't think it says here, but a lot from reviews and things of that about the product. And it's just kind of a summarization like Amazon does. It's one of the places I do appreciate that. I go to the Amazon re section about a product and it'll give me what people are saying about this. And don't immediately tell me what the weaknesses are. And then I always go to the 1-star reviews first to see if it's a person error or a product error, and the 1-star reviews, if there's any, significant number. And so this is helpful in Amazon. So I think it'd be really helpful in Google too.
I absolutely agree. This would drive me nuts. I have no idea why Microsoft is doing this, but Microsoft is retiring its advertising mobile app. So if you're an ad buyer, if you're involved in the Microsoft ad environment, you can't check it on your cell phone anymore.
Is this
This would
such
be
a
like,
weird one?
yeah, why would you do this? Why would
I
they do
don't
this?
know. I don't know. This is a weird one to me because, as you and I both know, and just organic, ours is a constantly moving industry, right? So if you suddenly see a lot of chatter about, oh, there was a big Google update, you immediately get on your phone and go, even when we didn't have Google Search Console in mobile form, I would go to the website version, the desktop version on my phone and look at what's going on, right? So the idea that for people who do ads, they have no access except through other tools and a web interface, meaning desktop or using your phone in desktop mode, which is always difficult. It's not very easy to read. That just seems just odd to me. I honestly do not understand myself. It does not make any sense. Because you could monitor your campaign. Sorry, Jim, I was going to say just real quick, quickly make changes to update your status, get notified to know when automatic rules or credit cards are about to expire. Imagine you're on vacation and you hit your advertising limit, your credit card limit, and you have to up it. Now you have to fumble through a desktop version on your phone or find a computer or use a third-party app. I just
Right now I'm in the Google store on my Android device, just confirming you can in fact get Google Analytics and Google Ads
Yeah.
in on your cell phone. You know what you can't get though? Search Console. Still don't have a
No,
web, still don't have a mobile app.
they don't. The difference, though, is they changed to a responsive design in the phone. So I used to have to use a desktop version, which was so hard to read. And
Yeah, I know. I use a desktop version of but I do not have an app, and I really wish I did.
I really do. I do. I did have an app that was third party that was pretty good, but then it stopped working. So,
My guess, honestly, is it is, and I hate to say this, but it's probably they just don't have enough people, enough advertisers using the app to make it worth supporting any longer.
or a lot of the cuts, like we've seen so many people lose their jobs in the last year, right? They didn't lose their jobs because they were replaced by AI. They lost their jobs because they needed to money for AI. So they may have just decided this is something where they could cut to put more money into AI.
Well, it is not the way to build a better railroad. It's a way to give up on your railroad.
Yeah,
So,
very much so, especially with the tenuous nature of the AI industry right now. It's there's no definites going forward right at this moment.
there is one definite in the SEO industry, and that's SEO will never die. It's true. I mean, like SEO has been dead so many times in my career. It may DYE and change its nature every once in a while, but it will never DIE and go the way of the dodo and just completely expire. It'll just transform into a bunch of other things. And one of those other things is our fascination with AI, with AIO. With generative experiences, generative experience optimization, etc. And as it turns out, that's all. I
Over
mean,
in
we
TC.
may, it's all SEO stuff. We may use different names to describe the different environments that it's working in, but at the end of the day, it's all SEO stuff. Slightly changed for the new environment,
But
certainly.
just like local e-commerce and news are slightly different. So we wouldn't call those separate. So,
So John
but
Mueller is joking. He says he's out there like watching
or
the environment.
can I read the quote first? Because I love
Yeah,
this quote.
go
It's
for
my
it.
favorite quote of the month. Ian Lurie wrote on Blue Sky, "All of you talking breathlessly about GEO and then telling me your big tactic is to create better, more detailed content and cloaked AI bot-only pages are making me pray for an asteroid that's much harder." And then John says, "Don't forget," or go ahead, Debbie, go ahead.
Well, good. Don't forget all the GEO detox work that will be paid for next year. It's a cycle of SEO life.
I love that quote for this month. It's my favorite.
So one of the things, and not so much anymore, but it was 3 or 4 years ago, maybe a bit longer, when headless sites were just coming across the horizon, probably longer than 3 or 4 years ago, probably more like 10 years ago, I started making a lot of money doing cleanup work. Other SEOs completely botched a job, and then it came to me, and I got to clean up their mess. That's what John's talking about here. A lot of the GEO detox, when people just completely flub up what they're attempting to do and spam the crap out of Google and get in trouble for it. I think that's what he's getting at.
That and part of just the work. So most of this stuff has been in searches we know for a long time, but people are just discovering it. But like the putting things in the wrong syllable, the wrong emphasis. It's sort of like the cleanup work I did after everyone started following the oh my gosh, why can't I think of Quality Raters Guide specifically, right? Like at two doctors come to me who spent $80,000 on all new content. Because they thought they had to have new unique writers that had doctors after their name when they actually oversaw all the content and they got zero bump for it. And I had to explain to them why you got zero bump was your content was already really good. You already wrote it. It was already overseen by you. So you didn't need an author's name to get a bump. It wouldn't have given you a bump. So it's things like that where misapplied tactics, you wind up having people like you and me come behind and help them fix that because you're looking at the wrong things or worrying about the wrong things. Like the difference, some of the difference might be you want to make sure that you are cited oftenly because the predictive text model is based on probabilities and how often they've seen your name associated with other entities, nouns. And so you may put a lot of money into to that work, but find out you're only getting 2% referral from the large language model. So did you forget to do links during that time? Did you forget to do content optimization? Did you have people writing for you? All those kind of things. That now you need to reapply that money to because you let those things kind of fall to the wayside
But
while
yeah.
you're chasing the supposed geo tactic. So, just so everyone knows, as Google has said, everything is fairly similar between AI Mode, AI Overviews, and Google Organic when it comes to how they index and rate the quality of a website. The difference is in the ranking factors. There are no ranking factors in AI Mode and AI Overviews.
And while history never repeats itself exactly, it does cycle in a very rhythmic, rhyming cycle. And next year is gonna be a pretty successful year, I think. Yep, shot
Yep,
this feeling.
because it was a really it, for any SEOs out there, you know, it was a rough year. And I mean, even the people with Fortune 100s all dropped to a minimum on some of the companies I know. And they had long-standing relationships with those clients. They didn't go away. The client didn't leave, but the client dropped their work level way down. So hopefully next year is a opposite for everybody in the industry.
Hopefully, for the first time in I have no idea how long, I'm feeling the downturn. Which I mean, that sounds really arrogant. I'm really sorry about that. Sorry to say that, but like, honest to goodness, I'm a bellwether. Like, I'm pretty. You're kind of the same way, Christine. We're pretty insulated because we've been around so long. We're really well known, and we're kind of like SEOs, where people come to us with like problems that other people can't solve, and if I'm starting to feel the downturn, I can't imagine what it's like in the real in the real trenches.
You know, in May and June, there was no work for anybody. I talked to some people that were worried about closing their agencies. Some people had to borrow large amounts of money. The work just stopped. And as far as audits this year, this is the lowest number of audits I've ever had in 15 years. People are not auditing their websites. And unfortunately for them, next year, when Google does start to come back with, I believe updates are going to be frequent next year. Or if you have a lot of pages that say crawled but not indexed, you've been de-indexed, you just don't know it. So I think a lot of those come back next year. But yeah, even audits, which are, you know, something that's pretty stable over the years. Like, it's a pretty stable business because even if there aren't updates, people are suffering downturns or they don't know why they're not doing as well as they should be. And people like you and me, we assess those and we help them, you know, get their traffic back or grow or whatever it happens to be. There wasn't even a concentration on that this year because everyone was concentrating on these, I think, the AI space. And
Well, yeah,
that should change by next year.
no one really knew what to do again because this new shiny toy is here. So, I think there's going to be a lot more clarity as we understand what this new shiny toy really is and how it's really going to be impacting the way people look for and relate to information. And it's I think it's going to have profound impact still, but when business starts to really understand the implications of the AI revolution, really understand it, not the hype. I think that the market will flood back in. It's like a tsunami where for the tsunami to happen, the tide has to go out, but then it floods back in ways you wouldn't believe.
And I have to give John Mueller and Gary Ish and the others credit for kind of weighing in on these topics, like here, because it makes for clarity that you don't necessarily have. Because I do know a lot of clients in the past have read Search Engine Roundtable, Search Engine Journal, and come back to me with an article. And so the fact that Google is, you know, actually telling people, like, the indexes aren't that different between all three. It's just the ranking factors exist in organic and the others do not have them. It's a lot of clarity for those that are paying for the services that they don't have to like invest in a whole new thing that they don't understand. So it's good to see Google doing
Okay. We've gone around the clock. That's the last of our stories, and it happens to be Thanksgiving weekend in the United States. So,
that. Yay.
Christine, happy Thanksgiving to people listening. Happy Thanksgiving. I hope the year's gonna treat you well.
Yeah, it was a good Thanksgiving here. I went to my homeless serve. I call it homeless serve because that's what they call it. It's like anyone underserved in the community, and we had lots of food. People all bring food for potluck, basically. Lots of food and lots of dancing and things like that. It was a really good day. And then I went to a Friendsgiving and played games and had all sorts
Excellent.
of foods people made. So it was a very, very good day. It was a good
Well,
Thanksgiving. So.
I'm glad you had a good time, and I hope everybody out there had a good time and an excellent, loving time with their families and friends and communities and all that sort of stuff. But we ain't gonna be back for another week. So, on behalf of Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. You've been listening to Webcology, recorded over a couple days on the Thanksgiving long weekend. Recorded to podcast between the 26th and the 28th of November. Special shout out to Brasco and to Ricky in the studio and Darren and Brandy in the front office, and most importantly, a shout out to Audience Key and Wix Studio, our sponsors. Friends, be kind to each other, be good, rank well, be well, and we will talk to you next week.
Hi, everybody.